comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth. Imam Khomeini's opinion on religious democracy. Islamic community of Iran has accepted the Islamic Republic and its lofty values and the sovereignty of laws of God with its knowledge and political maturity and have remained commitment to this great alliance and contract.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Imam Khomeini, in one of his speeches, he said that elections are not the exclusive rights of anyone. It does not belong to the clergyman or to any party or group exclusively. Elections are the business of all the people. It is the nation which, by its vote, designates the president, votes for and determines the Islamic Republic, and by its concerned vote in the Majlis approves the government. All affairs are in the hands of the nation. According to this speech, this part of the speech of Imam Khomeini, it is very much clear that it is the nation who makes the decision. It is the nation who takes the decision. It is the nation who chose how to spend next couple of years. It's all in the hands of nations. It is not exclusive to any clergyman. It's not exclusive to any group, any party, because the groups and parties, they do not make any sense when it's an Islamic state, especially when it is a presidential election. People are free to choose amongst the candidate who they want. It's not the matter of any party, any group. It's the people themselves.
Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum.
It is the people who make their fortune for the next couple of years, maybe 4 years or 8 years. It depends on the people that who they select. And then tomorrow, people themselves are answerable for what they choose. The person who they choose is answerable to the people because he's been elected by the people. So the election has a main role in the Islamic State as well. The election, when happens, it is upon the people to basically participate in it. Why? Because it is the business of all people. All affairs are in the hands of nation. The nation wants freedom. When they struggle, they do revolution. this revolution which they have done, obviously it shows that it is in their hands. It is for them. And when they're doing this revolution, they're doing this revolution for themselves, for the future of the nation. Therefore, one of the tools that helps a nation to progress is election. If someone ignores election, he has given his right away. He is not using from his rights, the basic right that he had to choose a perfect person in order to make his future right, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Asian elephants in China has turned into international stars after leaving their natural habitat in Yunnan province. The herd of 15 elephants is said to have left home in southwest China 15 months ago, but it was in April when they grabbed officials' attention after they were spotted by locals. The elephants have so far trekked nearly 500 kilometers across the country. They have traveled through villages and towns and even stopped for a rest. Local authorities have welcomed these mammoth travelers with treats of sweet corn and bananas. They are monitoring the elephants' movements with drones while keeping them away from residential areas.
Chinese grandma has given a dazzling display of her masterly kung fu performance at a martial arts competition. The 98-year-old woman and her son took the stage as a curtain raiser to the event. The duo put on a kung fu show before a large crowd of spectators who were impressed by her skillful gestures. She was invited to the competition to act as a judge.
I started practicing martial arts when I was only 5. I would box every day, learning movements like chopping, pushing palm, and thrusting palm. Though I am old now, my strength hasn't gone.
Zhang says she's inherited her family's martial arts. She's rumored to have a sense of justice from a very young age and try to help others, which earned her quite a reputation where she lives. Traditional martial arts have been passed down in the Zhongkang village located in Zhejiang province for 500 years. Let's go to Italy, where Mount Etna has put on an eye-catching show with its spectacular eruptions. Red hot lava fountains and plumes of smoke spewed up into the sky. The main eruption was located at the southeastern crater of the volcano. Mount Etna is Europe's tallest active volcano. It's located above the Sicilian town of Catania. It often erupts but rarely causes damage. However, nearby residents have to deal with ash showers. Geological studies show that Mount Etna has been active for more than 2 million years now. Egypt has opened its first archaeological replica factory in an attempt to promote its culture worldwide. The factory was inaugurated in response to people's demand for having detailed copies of ancient treasures. So far, over 6,400 high-quality replicas of ancient Egyptian artifacts have been produced. More than 150 artists work to make the goods out of stone, wood, and even gold.
The materials with which these are made are high quality. The highest and most elegant materials are being used to make these samples, and the materials are very close to those used to make the original artifacts.
The models have certificates showing that they are identical copies of the original artifacts. Each replica also has a barcode that provides extra information about the item. The factory is located in Cuyuba, about 35 kilometers northeast of the capital, Cairo.
Now, a lot of people don't like rats and find them disgusting most of the time. However, the rodents are doing life-saving work in Cambodia. Now, the Southeast Asian nation has deployed a new squad of African giant pouched rats to sniff out old landmines. The new recruits have shown an exceptional ability at their task, with their handlers claiming 100% accuracy. There are now nearly 50 demining rats working in the field in Cambodia. The country started using the animal services in 2016, and they have helped detect and clear hundreds of landmines since. Last year, an especially heroic rat called Magawa attracted global fame after receiving a gold medal for his work. The hero rat, who is now retired, detected over 71 landmines.
A muralist from Greece is blending mythology with graffiti and street art to depict how COVID-19 has impacted lives around the globe. Ficus Antonios has painted the walls of many cities around the globe. He is now in the Cypriot capital, Nicosia, to continue his work. His latest artwork depicts Americus, a Cypriot mythical figure who was punished by the gods and turned into a plant. The Greek artist believes this theme is similar to the situation people around the globe have experienced since the pandemic began. He explains many people have grown roots because they're staying in one place for so long. Two British artists have brought a combination of fun art and environmental concerns to the sidelines of the G7 summit. They have created a modern-day version of famous sculpture carved into America's Mount Rushmore. This time, it's called Mount Recyclemore. Joe Rush and Alex Rakic have made a sculpture of G7 leaders with electronic waste. They say their major goal is to raise awareness about the amount of unrecycled tech and gadgets, the damage they cause to the environment, and the ways to combat the issue internationally.
Well, what I'd like them to do, the leaders of the G7 conference, is I'd like them all to talk to each other and work out a plan that isn't just shifting the problem from one country to another, you know, but actually is a plan that we all work on together, which is how to deal with this waste and how to stop producing so much waste and how to recycle things. And all these issues have got to be dealt with globally. They can't be dealt with nationally because that's where the problem is. So we need them all to get together, like we've put them together here, and deal with the problem.
The United Nations says 53 million tons of electronic waste are generated annually all over the world. It estimates that the amount of the waste will double in less than 30 years. If that happens, electronic waste would become the fastest growing waste stream in the world. Advanced robots are increasingly helping humans in a variety of innovative ways. Now, they have found a place in the healthcare system and will help nurses and doctors stay safe during the COVID-19 pandemic.
I can do all kinds of things for elderly people. I can visit with people and brighten their day with social stimulation, entertain and help guide exercise, but also can do talk therapy, take bio readings and help healthcare providers assess their health and deliver treatments.
Grace, which is the newest humanoid robot to join the healthcare fleet. This intelligent machine can take temperatures and record other vital signs of patients. It has been designed in a way to also interact with the elderly and those isolated by the pandemic. Grace is a new prototype of celebrity humanoid robot, Sophia, created by a robotic team in Hong Kong.
So we designed Grace to look professional in a healthcare setting. So that would mean so that she would resemble the sort of human-like appearance of healthcare staff. And so then this would facilitate more natural interactions. A human-like appearance facilitates trust and facilitates a natural engagement because we're wired for human face-to-face interactions. That's just the way human beings are.
Hansen, a while standing between Sophia and Grace, also said that both robots could speak different languages. He said Grace's creation was aimed at relieving the burden of frontline hospital staff dealing with COVID-19 patients. The company is planning a mass production of Grace and offers them to the market by August. The cost of making this robot is similar to a luxury car, but the cost is likely to decrease once the company begins manufacturing it in thousands.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A tiny worm has wriggled back to life after lying frozen for 24,000 years in the permafrost land of northern Siberia. The organism was recovered from soil samples taken from 3.5 meters below the ground in Russia's Yakutia region. It's a multicellular organism that can withstand extreme cold. This ancient worm has broken the record for the longest living abeloid rotifer worm. Previous research suggests that it could survive for a decade when frozen. Earlier, scientists also discovered 30,000-year-old microscopic worms from northern Siberia. Australian scientists have discovered one of the world's largest ever dinosaur species in the Erromanga area in outback Queensland. Research shows the plant-eating sauropod lived between 92 million and 96 million years ago when Australia was attached to Antarctica. Paleontologists estimated the dinosaur was as long as a basketball court and as tall as a two-story building. That makes it the largest dinosaur ever found in Australia and one of the top five largest ones in the world. Bones of the dinosaur were first uncovered more than a decade ago by cattle farmers. Iranian capital Tehran has hosted a festival of cake sculptors. The event showcases delicious sweets that are carved into eye-catching sculptures. Yusuf Jalali has more.
It's not a piece of cake to bake a sculpture, but pastry chefs here have made it. In the fourth festival of cake sculptures in Iran, sugarcraft artists from across the country have come under one roof in Tehran to cast their spell on these sweets and carve a wide range of fascinating 3D figures out of them. From this tasty coronavirus to this beautiful angel that is picking up the only eatable trash in the world.
Here you can see this angel, which represents the innocent heart of labor children, collecting pieces of trash that contain some of the simplest dreams of a labor child, such as quality food, books, and toys.
My cake is made based on what we call installation art. I have put together iconic structures and monuments of Iran, but when you take a look at them from a special angle, you can see Iran's map.
Some of the cake sculptures here have really pushed the envelope of the art of sculpting, like this bust that shows the 13th century Persian poet Rumi, surrounded with a heavenly garden that's decorated with intricate and mind-boggling details. It took its creator almost a month to finish it.
In the middle,
I have put the bust of Rumi, who we refer to as Maulana in Iran. He's holding his most significant verse work, Masnavi Manavi. The garden I created around him and the birds here all are inspired by his poems.
Organizers say they hold the festival every year to modernize the confectionery industry and combine it with fine arts to make it more appealing to the public.
500 works are showcased here in four sections. Bust cakes, wedding cakes, cookie cakes, which are made using royal icing, and the fourth section is cream cakes. The major goal is to scout for talents who can revolutionize the confectionery industry.
Some of the participants in the festival are pastry chefs who try to make their cakes look better, and others are actually pro sculptors who want to bake a figure instead of carving it. Perhaps it's easy to tell who is who by taking a glimpse at their cakes. But sweets will win the competition. They're both delicious and delicate.
It takes ultimate care and a knack for both bakery and artistry to be able to transform sweets into statues. In fact, they're both so spectacular and yummy that make you want to have the cake and eat it too. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Nowadays, phone addiction is causing an increasing number of accidents worldwide. A Korean engineer has come up with a creative, although satirical, way to tackle that issue. Pang Min-wook is a 28-year-old industrial engineer or designer. He has invented a robotic eyeball people can wear to avoid accidents when using their phones while walking. The device is strapped to the forehead and opens its eyelids when the users lower their heads. The third eye then beeps in warning when the user comes within 1 or 2 meters of an obstacle. Pang says his device is not a solution to the issue and hopes that people will understand the severity of their reliance on gadgets when they see their third eye.
A science professor has released spectacular drone footage of lava streaming from an Icelandic volcano. Sørensen Johnson flew a drone over the volcano 2 months after it started erupting. He captured close-up shots of lava bubbling in its crater in the southwest of Iceland's capital. The volcanologists say that they have no idea how long this eruption will continue, adding that magma could flow for years. Iceland is home to dozens of active volcanoes. Volcanic landscapes have turned into a tourist attraction in the Scandinavian country.
After a year-long delay due to the pandemic, Euro 2020 finally kicks off in Rome, and football lovers all over the world are in a fever. Now, a French baker living in Germany has also seized the moment to create special pastries for the championships. Ludovic Gerboin is a huge football fan. He has made sweets for all the teams present in this year's Euros, but most of his cakes are inspired by the French and German flags. He has mixed bakery traditions from different countries to capture the multinational spirit of the tournament. Ludovic hopes his country of origin, France, will lift the much coveted cup, but he is also favoring Germany.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the All-Beneficent, the All-Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Ulama Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a speech by Ayatollah Meshkini.
در روایت امام صادق فرمود از دنیا کلها جهل الا مواضع العلم.
In a tradition, Imam Sadiq says, the whole world is ignorance except for the parts where there is proximity to God and knowledge. In Imam's opinion, even the knowledge you gain or your scientific specialty is part of the ignorance in this world if it is not going to result in your proximity to God. And then Imam continues by saying that, any new thing you learn, if it is not going to approximate you to God, then definitely it has created a distance between you and your God.
فرماید جز اونجا که علم در اونجا نفوذ داره، علم اینجا در این روایت علم اون علمی که تو را به خدا نزدیک کند، علم شما.
So in this tradition, by science or knowledge, Imam means anything that can approximate you to God. Anything except this is considered as ignorance. Sheikh al-Baha'i, one of the greatest Shiite scholars, also says, seek knowledge which becomes light in your heart. This is the knowledge we should seek. And then Imam says, the knowledge you gain is definitely a proof against you unless you practice what you learn. So what you learn could stand against you if you do not practice it. Well, Imam continues his words, it is not even enough to practice. What you practice must be with pure intention. The pure intention in what you practice is very important. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by the late Ayatollah Meshkini. Please visit our website, which is parsetoday.com, and by clicking on the tab Call of Islam on the top right corner of the page, you can listen to this program as well as the other programs of this radio station. And you can send an email to englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, we leave you in Allah's care.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me, proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away, proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God. Welcome to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We're going to talk about ghusl or the ritual bath according to Ayatollah Sistani. Before that, let's take a listen to a short biography.
The grand Ayatollah Sistani comes from the family of scholars and pious men. He learned theological and rational sciences from many eminent and well-known religious scholars. At the age of 5, His Eminence started learning the Holy Quran. He was then admitted in a religious center for reading, writing, and for learning basic mathematics and geography. In the beginning of 1360 Hijri, he started studying basic Hausa lessons. He also studied a number of books on philosophy like Sharh Manzumah Sabzawari and Sharh Ishraq. Meanwhile, he attended Kharij lectures by the late Mirza Mehdi Ashtiani and the late Mirza Hashim Qazvini. In the late 1368 Hijri, he migrated to Qum to accomplish his studies in fiqh and usul. His Eminence left Qum for Najaf al-Ashraf. On having arrived in Najaf, he began attending Qayatullah Khoi and Sheikh Hussain Hilli's lectures in jurisprudence and the fundamentals of jurisprudence. In 1380 Hijri, Ayatollah Sistani traveled back to his hometown, the holy city of Mashhad, expecting to stay and settle down there. In the same year, he was awarded a permit by Imam Al-Khoi and another by Sheikh Hilli, certifying that he had attained the level of ijtihad, that is, deduction of legal judgment in matters of religion.
Well, Let's talk about ghusl, the ritual bath, according to the fatwas of Ayatollah Sistani. How is a tartib or sequential ghusl done or performed?
Well, tartib ghusl or the sequential ghusl means that one has to start washing his head and neck first. Head and neck first,
right?
And then he has to wash the right side of his body and then the left side.
Mm-hmm.
Ayatollah Sistani is of the view that it's not necessary to observe sequence between the right side of the body and the left side of the body, okay? Contrary to many other fuqaha and scholars who are of the view that even the sequence has to be observed between the right side of the body and the left side.
But what about the head?
Of After course, when it comes to the head and the neck, of course, you have to wash your head and neck, okay, first. That sequence has to be observed.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to the right...
But first is the condition for every marja, for every religious authority.
Yes.
Okay.
And when it comes to the right side of the body and the left side, of course, it is better, according to Ayatollah Sistani, to observe the sequence. But if you happen not to observe... Mm-hmm. And you wash your body at once without even taking consideration of the left and the right sides,
mm-hmm.
then it's not necessary. And of course, your ghusl will not be affected, okay?
I see.
And let me tell you one thing. We have, ghusl under shower, okay? Under shower. Because you stand under shower and the water falls... Yeah?
On
your head and then your body, all parts of your body becomes wet. Ayatollah Sistani is of the view that, okay, you have to wash your head and neck first under shower, and then you have to, let's say, stop the water, or you can just turn off the water and then turn it on again
mm-hmm.
to let the water fall on your body, okay? You cannot, based on obligatory precaution, this is just a precaution, it's not a fatwa, okay? Based on, as an obligatory precaution, a person has to stop the water and then start washing his body when he is taking bath or when he is performing ghusl under a shower, okay?
Right.
And poorer countries, in some countries or some families, of course, do not have a shower in their bathroom or in their bathroom. So they use a tub. They fill the tub with water and then they use something to pour water on their heads and necks, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And for performing ghusl, it's not necessary to use a lot of water, okay? It is permissible to... It's what is necessary, actually, is to make water reach the body, okay? Reach the body.
Mm-hmm.
It is not necessary to wash your body twice or thrice or to make sure that no part of your body remains, let's say... remains dirty, okay? Mm-hmm. To make water reach your body is sufficient, even if the water does not flow off, okay? Yes, if the water remains in your body, it does not fall off, it does not trickle down, it is sufficient, okay? And many, let's say, ladies who have long hair, they wonder whether it is permissible for them to just wash their head and not their hair. Of course, it's not necessary to wash your hair
mm-hmm.
during ghusl. Yes, to make water reach the scalp or the skin of your head is enough. It's not necessary to wash your head, your hair, because it takes long time for the hair to dry up and to get dry. Of course, families don't have the hair dryer, and so it's very much difficult for mm-hmm. women to keep wet hair in the winter season when it takes time for the hair to dry.
I see.
So washing the hair is not necessary.
Uh-huh. That's a very good point. Thank you very much, Sheikh.
The Office of Ayatollah Sistani is currently providing the following services. 1. Board of Istifta, replying to religious questions. 2. Helping the poor, needy, homeless, and those who have suffered losses by earthquakes and floods. 3. Sending books for people who want to understand and learn Islam. 4. Hajj delegation. 5. Sending preachers. Board of Istiftah is a link between Ayatollah Sistani and people. It provides them with answers to questions pertaining to religious, ideological, social, and educational matters in accordance with the verdicts and rulings of Ayatollah Sistani. For more information, visit the website of Ayatollah Sistani at www.sistani.org. You can also ask your questions through the following email, english@sistani.org.
What about some areas of dirt on the body? Is it necessary for a ghusl to be completed? In fact, to clean the body from any kind of impurities before performing an obligatory ghusl?
Well, that's also a very good question. One who performs ghusl must make sure that no external substance or no dirt is there on his or on her body. Okay. If a person happens to find a piece of dirt on his body after he or she completes the ghusl, and when he comes out of the bathroom and finds that there is some dirt on his, let's say, body, on his legs, on his hands, on and so on, so it is not necessary in this case to perform the ghusl all over again. Okay. Yeah, it is just necessary to remove the dirt and then wash that part of the body with the intention of completing the ghusl. So it's not necessary to take off your shirt and just to make water reach that part of the body is sufficient. After removing the dirt, after removing that thing which forms a kind of impediment, a kind of barrier making water not to reach the skin. So after removing
like a patch of wood, for example?
Yeah, it can be anything which is considered impediment or barrier in common view, okay? So it has to be removed, and that part of the body should be washed, okay? Or water has to be made to reach that part of the body.
The skin, yeah. Basically.
And the intention is to... The intention one should keep is to complete his ghusl, okay? And it should be noted that there's no consecutiveness, or you can say it,
order
or successiveness, succession in ghusl. You know, you can, for example, wash your head and neck in the morning, and then wash the right side of your body at noon, and then wash the rest of your body in the evening. So. It's not like wuzu. It's not necessary to wash the second part immediately after the first part, and then the third part immediately after the second part.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much again, Sheikh, for the complete and nice answer you provided to the previous question. But another question regarding performing ghusl would be the fact that is it necessary to place the hands over the body parts to flow the water over it? We know that. You know, in wuzu, for example, we put the hands after rinsing that part, or when we pour like a handful of water on our arms, for example, from the elbow to the tip of the fingers, we rub it gently across, right? All over from the elbow to the tip of the fingers. And we basically direct the water and rub our skin gently by rinsing it. Is it necessary to do the same thing for ghusl?
It is absolutely not necessary to rub off, okay, the water and to make water flow out of your body or to flow off your body.
Okay.
And, of course, rubbing is not a necessary condition.
Mm-hmm.
Rubbing, the aim of rubbing the body while doing ghusl is to make sure that water reaches all parts of the body, because some parts of the body, like for example, there are some poles, like there might be some hair, okay, which may prevent water from reaching the skin. In that case, you rub your body to make sure that water reaches the skin. Otherwise, rubbing itself and off itself is not required. It's not obligatory.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. That was the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
An ugly part of Canada's hidden history made headlines in late May when unmarked graves containing the remains of 215 Indigenous children were discovered on the grounds of the Kamloops Indian Residential School in British Columbia. The grim discovery has rekindled discussion of an ominous time in the country's history.
Certainly no surprise at all. Everybody in the First Nations community knew that there were mass graves. We've been calling it for years. We've been telling the government for years that there are mass graves in every single residential school, but they didn't listen to us.
Kamloops was one out of the many residential schools in Canada designed to assimilate Indigenous children into Western culture. Around 1883, Indigenous children in many parts of Canada were forced to attend residential schools, often far from their communities.
There's nothing more painful in life than losing a child. My heart breaks today thinking of all the loving parents who never saw their children return home and who were never granted the dignity of knowing what happened.
Most of these schools were operated by churches, and all of them banned the use of Indigenous languages and Indigenous cultural practices, often through violence. Disease, as well as sexual, physical, and emotional abuse, were widespread.
Residential schools have been happening for a very long time, and it's really a tragedy for having those priests and those nuns running those schools, raping and killing and murdering and abusing those Indigenous children. And it really takes effect into all the younger generation, that intergenerational trauma. And it's really hard to move on from it.
The Kamloops School was operated by the Roman Catholic Church from 1890 until 1969, when the federal government took over the school system. Reports indicated that the students at Kamloops were severely mistreated and malnourished at times.
Many were sorely neglected, and not properly fed, clothed, or housed. Others suffered physical, psychological, and sexual abuse. All were deprived of the love and care of their families, of their parents, and of their communities. These are the hard truths that are part of Canada's history.
The fact is, for many decades, Indigenous people across Canada have disappeared, suffered violence, or been killed, and the Canadian government and justice system has failed them. Sadly, this is not simply a relic of the past. To this day, the safety, security, and dignity of indigenous people are routinely threatened, while their human rights are consistently and systematically violated.
If Canada is serious about reconciliation, we want more than words and tears. We want action, and we want to say in the control and destiny of our rights and for our children and for future generations.
Six years of hearing from nearly 7,000 witnesses to document the history of the schools show that the system was a form of cultural genocide.
I had something on my back the whole time, which was this. The culture, loss of culture, loss of language. It's dragged with me my whole life.
At the same time, the Pope has been called on to apologize for the Roman Catholic Church's role, but Pope Francis has stopped short of offering a formal apology so far, saying the sad discovery further raises awareness of the pains and sufferings of the past. According to the National Truth and Reconciliation Commission, NTRC, priests at the schools fathered infants with indigenous students. The babies were taken away from their young mothers and killed, and in some cases, their bodies were thrown into furnaces. According to the commission, many students also died from disease, accidents, fires, and during attempts to escape. Schools would suffer mass deaths when infectious diseases swept through them. The commission estimated that at least 4,100 students had died or gone missing from the residential schools. The recent bombshell has once again fueled the nation's debate on how to compensate for its history of exploiting indigenous people, while many are asking how so many children could end up having a fate like these students. An estimated 150,000 indigenous children passed through the schools between their opening around 1883 and their closing in 1996.
When I heard about the 250 children who, you know, were discovered, their remains were discovered in a residential school mass graveyard, my heart was absolutely broken. I've been sort of in a grieving mode since, because not only do I grieve for them, but I grieve for my mother. She's not, you know, my late mother, because she went through a residential school and she experienced a lot of those things, and she was never able to tell her story, to tell the atrocities that she went through. The 215 children, that's only the beginning.
The children found in Kamloops, or those who have yet to be found in other places across the country, would have been grandparents or great-grandparents, but they are not, due to deep-seated racism in the governing system of Canada.
I think that there's a lot of people in mainstream society that are unaware of the history and what happened to us, the genocide, the smallpox, all the stuff that really was very detrimental to our population.
That's why we're called survivors. We survived the torture, we survived the containment, we survived the punishment, the brainwashing that happened to our kids. That's why some of us are alive, we survived that. That's why we're called survivors. And some did not survive that onslaught done by the Crown, Canada, the churches, and corporate greed.
Amid growing outrage, the federal government said it would urgently disperse money promised 2 years ago to Indigenous communities that want to search former school sites for the remains of children. In 2019, the government promised nearly $28 million over 3 years to support, among other things, locating the bodies of children who attended the schools, but it did not honor its promise.
What they need to do is acknowledge that this was a wrong. What Trudeau doesn't want to acknowledge that it was a genocide. But there's actually been five genocides, the fifth one ongoing. So they need to give in and stop fighting it and compensate the residential school survivors. That's one thing. Because they had billions for COVID relief, but they didn't want to pay anything to the First Nations residential school survivors.
Indigenous people hope that the shock that followed the discovery in Kamloops would lead Canada to step up efforts at bringing about reconciliation and eliminating discrimination against them. But will the shock act as a catalyst? We have to wait and see.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll be discussing the commentary of the 23rd chapter of the Holy Quran, Suratul Mu'minun, or the Believers. Now let's just listen to the related verses and then we'll be back. So stay with us.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
Wa la in ata'tum basharan mithlakum innakum.
And if you should obey a man like yourselves, indeed, you would then be losers.
أَيَعِدُكُمْ أَنَّكُمْ